everybody. Welcome to Profoundly Pointless. My name is Nick VinZant. Coming up in this episode, violins and things we wish we were better at.
When I was around age 13, I discovered electric violins. And then for me, it was game over from there. Like that, I was like, this is what I have to do. I have to get my hands on an electric violin. Playing violin is very, very difficult. And you're trying to train your muscle memory so that your fingers go to that exact perfect 10th of a millimeter spot every single time. And so it really takes a lot out of you. What ended up happening, I was going through kind of a period of questioning myself musically, and I was feeling a lot of imposter syndrome. I posted this one video and I woke up the next morning with 100,000 followers, and I was at the grocery store and I started crying.
I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, like, download, subscribe, share, leave a review. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. So I think the best way to introduce our first guest is to let you hear her music. This is electric violinist Mia Asano. Was it always the violin for you, or did you try other instruments and then find the violin?
When I was 5 years old, I was given the choice from my parents. They said you could play violin, guitar, or piano. And I chose the violin. And, you know, I could have had other opportunities to try other instruments throughout the years, but I kind of just fell in love with the violin right away and basically never looked back.
What was it about it?
It's hard recalling back to my five-year-old brain. I think I just probably liked the look and sound of it the most.
I would say that probably the violin is the coolest looking instrument to play.
I agree with that. I think both a typical acoustic classical violin, I think it looks beautiful, and it's one of my favorite instruments. But then when I was around age 13, I discovered electric violins. And then for me, it was game over from there. Like that, I was like, this is what I have to do. I have to get my hands on an electric violin. And that's why what I do normally now is I play both acoustic violin and electric violin. But I would say my primary at the moment and what I'm known for most is being an electric violinist.
So with me knowing absolutely nothing about violins besides what they're called, and that they have strings. Like what's the difference between your kind of classical violin and an electric violin? Like what's the difference there?
So a classical violin, it's also called, I mean, I call it an acoustic violin, but a lot of people recognize it as a classical violin. So you go to an orchestra and you see people playing these wooden instruments. That's a violin. And typically they have four strings. The string notes are E, A, D, and G. A lot of the time, people who play it will focus on the music of the classical traditions. So, you know, your Bach and your Beethoven and your Mozart. And that's a typical like classical violin. You also see, though, fiddle players. They'll play on acoustic violins as well, but they call them a fiddle. And that's what, when people typically think of a violin, that's what they think. An electric violin can take many shapes and forms because it doesn't rely on the body of the instrument to project the sound. So as you can see in a classical violin, it's hollow inside. And so through those little squiggly S looking things on the instrument, the sound comes through those. They're called the F holes. And the instrument itself is projecting the sound out. But on an electric violin, a lot of the time the body of the instrument is solid or it looks really weird. Like they can make them look as weird as they want. There's this one maker that makes them look like skulls, or there's one, the one that I play on, it's called a Viper. From wood violins, and it looks like a flying V electric guitar, and it has frets and seven strings. And so what an electric violin allows you to do, and why I became obsessed with them really quickly, is they're really similar to electric guitars. So you can plug it into like a guitar effects pedal rig. And so I can put distortion on it. I can make it sound like an electric guitar. I can put all these different crazy effects on it. And make it sound like not even like a violin anymore. So something I'm really passionate about is just breaking the boundaries of, you know, I was classically trained for 16 years. I still play classical music and I love it. in addition to that, I have all these other musical interests like rock and pop and electronic music. And my electric violin allows me to play those and play stylistically more appropriately in the setting. If I'm in a rock band, then I can plug in and play rock music instead of then I'll go play fiddle tunes with my Celtic band on my acoustic violin. So that's the difference.
Is there any kind of animosity there between like the classical violinists and the electric violinists? Like all these kids and their damn electric violins.
Yes. there's different, you know, I think this is true in any community. When people do something that's different and that kind of breaks from tradition, there are going to be purists who take offense to it. I've experienced incredible support from musicians in the classical community who see what I'm doing and they think like I really love that because it's taking the violin to a new level, that's opening it up to new audiences and blah blah blah. Then there's other people, and I get quite a bit of hate comments on my social media platforms from people who say I've been told that I'm a disgrace to the classical violin world. I've been told that there's like kind of an ongoing joke from some YouTube channel of people calling my electric violin sacrilegious. So, and I know it's kind of like an internet joke. So I don't take offense to it or get upset by it, but you know, there's a lot of people who will be like, that's a sacrilegious violin. Just play an acoustic violin, play a classical violin. And there's a lot of people who, because admittedly to be a classical violinist, it takes a lot of work. There are people that are practicing like 6 to 8 hours a day. And you know, I grew up doing that. I was in deep in the classical world. So I have a lot of respect for the classical community. I still consider myself a part of it in addition to the other stuff that I do. But there's people that have to put in so much work to play this music that is so intensely difficult. So to see someone playing an electric violin, there's a lot of misunderstandings. People think that it takes less skill to play an electric violin, which is not true. And there are people that think that because I'm playing pop music or rock music, people who are putting in 6 hours a day practicing this intense classical music, some of them get offended. They're like, what you're doing is so easy compared to how much work I've had to put in. I think it's a misunderstanding because I still have to put in a lot of work.
When you look at kind of an orchestra, is a violin a harder instrument to play than say like the saxophone? I don't know what else is in an orchestra. Would people like, ooh, you got to be good to play the violin?
People have to work very, very hard no matter what you play. So that's the caveat. That being said, playing violin is very, very difficult. And I feel very fortunate that I started when I was young because I didn't come up with this. Itzhak Perlman, a very famous violinist, said this. He said, you could take a beginner and sit them down at a piano and try to teach them Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. Sit them down at a piano and sit them down at a violin. By the end of the day, on the piano, it'll sound like Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. On the violin, you have no idea what it's going to sound like. Because you're dealing with the bow, which has the potential to sound so horrible if you don't know what you're doing with it. I think on any instrument, it can be very difficult to play the repertoire, like the difficult repertoire. On the violin, a lot of my students struggle a lot with making it not sound like screeching or that type of stuff. It's very challenging. So I'm glad I started when I was young because I joke that it takes you about 10 years to kind of figure out how to make it sound not terrible. And then after that, hopefully you're good enough that you can get into a music school.
So why is it so difficult?
So definitely the bow adds a whole nother level because you're not just There's so much potential, like I just mentioned, for the bow to sound scratchy or screechy. The other really difficult part is on the instrument itself, you want your notes to play in tune. And on the violin, there's about a tenth of a millimeter of space where you're playing the exact right note. And if your finger is anywhere around that perfect spot, you're out of tune. And so unlike on a guitar where you put your finger down between the frets and that's the correct note, or on a piano where as long as hopefully the piano's in tune, you press the key and it's in tune. On the violin, you could put your finger down in the right spot, and I'm putting finger quotations, the right spot, and it could still be the note, but not the perfectly in tune note. So I would have a violin lesson and we would spend the entire hour working on one measure of music because I wouldn't be playing that note perfectly in tune. And then a lot of the time on violin, you're playing chords. So that's multiple notes at the same time. And you have to play those notes so they are perfectly in tune with each other. So the way I would do that is I would play it and adjust my fingers slowly until I can hear them ringing in the most beautiful in tune way. And then I would take my hand off the instrument and I would put it back on the instrument and try it again. And you're trying to train your muscle memory so that your fingers go to that exact perfect 10th of a millimeter spot every single time. And so it really takes a lot out of you, I will say. And then my electric violin has frets on it. And so it looks like guitar frets. But contrary to popular belief, I have a lot of people that think that because I have frets on my electric violin, automatically I can play in tune. So people will say, you're cheating because you have frets on your electric. The frets don't actually help me play in tune because it's the same way as on my classical violin. I have a 10th of a millimeter on the electric violin that's perfectly in tune. The frets just serve as like a physical reference point. If I'm playing live and I can't hear myself, then I can see and feel where the notes are supposed to go. Because again, on the violin, you can put your finger anywhere and not, if you can't hear yourself, you don't know if that's in tune or not. You're constantly listening and adjusting to make sure everything is perfectly intonated.
So what makes a really, like somebody like yourself, what makes a good violinist really good?
For me personally, I judge it more based on, did you make me feel something with what you just played? And that's the mark of like a really good violinist for me.
When people kind of do that, when they put their own kind of signature on it, mm-hmm. right? Like, can people like myself hear the difference? Or is it mainly just people like you that would be able to hear the difference?
I think a trained violinist will be able to hear the difference because, again, there is typically an ideal way to play something. But the thing is, everyone has a different view of the right way to play a piece. Like, for example, kind of the composer that is highly revered for violinists is Bach, because he wrote these incredible sonatas and partitas for solo violin that are so difficult. And to play them beautifully is a really incredible. They're meant to be played in churches. Like, it's a very sacred piece of music for you to be able to play as a violinist. It's also really hard to play it well. And every single violinist in the world has a different idea of like the correct and proper way to play it. So what I learned is you can't really please everyone. I also learned from a teacher of mine that if I'm going to go play violin for like an audition for an orchestra and I go in playing Bach, chances are the way that I've interpreted it is not going to be the same as the way that the auditioner has interpreted it.
The music, that your own music. Now, is that something that you've written, or is that more of a stylistic interpretation of things?
It's both. So for my own music, what I mostly do nowadays is alternative contemporary styles of music. So again, pop rock, electronic, Celtic music. I go to the Berklee College of Music, so I've been studying jazz and R&B. There's all these different other styles of music that the violin is capable of. And what I mostly do is, I release original music, and I do write and release original music. So I actually just put out a single, and it's called Lunar, and it's kind of a pop electronic violin track, but I co-wrote it with a professor of mine, Jason Anik, who's an incredible jazz violinist. So with him, we kind of put a jazzy, bluesy spin on parts of it while still collaborating with some electronic producers to make it very like pop electronic. So that's kind of the style of music I'm trying to go in. But then on my social media, so what happened is about a year ago, I sort of accidentally had some videos go viral on TikTok and Instagram. And that was me kind of just doing pop covers, covering different like songs that were trending. And there was a pretty big public reaction to it. People really enjoyed it and really liked the electric violin that I was playing on. So a lot of what I do nowadays is playing covers and short, fun daily videos that I put out just for fun.
Were you surprised by the reaction that you had? Because I saw some stuff, it was like 10, let's call it 20 million, whatever, however many millions it is. But were you surprised by people's reaction to it?
I was surprised. I'll be honest, because what ended up happening, I was going through kind of a period of questioning myself musically, and I was feeling a lot of imposter syndrome. This was kind of like in the middle of the pandemic, when it was like that dark time when everyone was like, oh my gosh, like, when will this be over? And I was definitely feeling that. So just to kind of bring myself out of my slump and to try to come back to playing music that I felt passionate about, I started posting videos kind of secretly on TikTok. You know, I didn't know much about the platform. I just kind of woke up one day and I had this idea to, I was like, okay, there's all these trends that go around on TikTok. What if I did those trending things, but as electric violin covers? So I started doing it, not really expecting anything to happen. Like, obviously, it'd be nice to have your video go viral, but I wasn't really like setting out like, oh, I'm going to try to get TikTok famous. What ended up happening, though, is because I got really clear on, I want to be authentically myself. I want to help people and make people happy. I want to, and then I'd been honing my video editing skills and my audio editing skills throughout the pandemic. So all of that kind of combined into this perfect storm where within a week of me posting every day on the app, I posted this one video, just totally not expecting anything to happen. I threw it together in like a half hour, just like threw it up on the internet. And I went to the store with a friend, and as I'm leaving the store, I look and the video had 36,000 views. And I was like, oh my gosh. And it kept climbing and climbing. And by the end of the night, it had 2 million views. And I woke up the next morning with 100,000 followers. And I was at the grocery store and I started crying. I was like, how? I was not expecting that. And I couldn't believe that it happened literally overnight. There was like a really positive response to it. And that was so meaningful to me, because again, I'm coming off of months of feeling so uninspired and sad and feeling lost musically.
Are you ready for some harder/listener submitted questions?
Yeah, let's do it.
Hardest song to play.
The hardest song to play, I think that's really subjective. It depends on the person's abilities. That being said, I think any Paganini is extremely difficult. He's this incredible composer who wrote these caprices. So like, to be a violinist that can play a Paganini caprice is very, very impressive. And then any of like the bigger name violin concertos, I would say are very difficult.
Have you ever had a violin related injury?
Yes, I have had many violin related injuries. I was in an orchestra in high school and we were rehearsing, I think, to play at like Carnegie Hall, like, which was a very cool experience, but we were having these like really long, intense rehearsals. And it was like 17 hours over the course of 2 days. And I remember not knowing at the time, I was young. I didn't know to warm up and stretch before you played. I didn't know the importance of that. And because it was so intense and I was playing for so long and I didn't have the best posture, I've learned since then, but my shoulder started hurting. And then for the next few years, every time I would play, my shoulder would hurt, my left shoulder. So finally in college, I went into the physical therapist at my school and I was like, hey, I've had this shoulder pain for the last 4 years. Can you help me? And I went to a sports doctor and they diagnosed it as coracoid impingement. And then throughout the course of that year, I also developed tendonitis in my hands and forearms. And a lot of musicians and a lot of violinists that I know have these types of injuries just from, it's called an overuse injury, because again, there are people that are practicing 8 or 9 hours a day. So like, of course you're going to overuse it at some point.
So then is the violin the most dangerous instrument?
Well, any instrumentalist can injure themselves, like pianists, you know, guitar, like all of the, I don't know a single, I have a friend from high school who was an incredible, who is an incredible percussion player. And, you know, they were playing a marimba so much that they ended up with these forearm injuries. So it's not just violin. It's, they call us small muscle athletes. So, you know, you have your big muscle athletes, like a soccer player, or a football player, musicians, like technically, according to the sports doctors that I've talked to, that's why I had to go to a sports doctor. You know, we're exercising these small muscles in our hands and our fingers and our neck, in our shoulders, depending on the instrument, like drummers are using their legs.
Yeah.
So anyone is really, there's potential for injury for anyone if you don't know the right types of, if you don't know how to take care of your body. And if you're overdoing it. And unfortunately, a lot of young people, because we're not taught how to take care of ourselves, we're just taught practice a lot and get better.
Do people go nuts driving playing the violin? Like, I feel like it's the kind of thing that you would have to be like so obsessed with. You know, kind of like, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Black Swan or something like that, just the pressure and all that stuff. Like, does that happen to people?
I wouldn't specifically say like
go nuts,
but there's a lot of burnout that I also have experienced at times. There is a lot of pressure because everyone's kind of competing for similar jobs. Because it's dependent on the person, but a lot of the jobs for violinists are playing in an orchestra, for example, and there's only a certain number of seats in that orchestra, and a lot of those people in the orchestra have kind of a almost like permanent position. It's very hard to get a job in those settings unless you're really, really good. And to be really, really good, you need to practice really, really hard. And so, you know, people are competing for limited seats. There's very limited jobs available. And so as a result, it can be discouraging for some people. For other people, it's the thing that they want to do the most and they love it the most, and nothing will deter them from that. And I think for any musician, like, that's what it takes to make it far as a musician, is you have to have that internal drive and passion where it's almost like you can't do anything else. Like, you have to do this, and then it's worth it. It's worth it to put all that time and energy into it. Like they say, life is suffering. So what you need to find the thing that it's worth suffering for.
Most expensive violin you've ever played?
Oh no. The most expensive one I've ever played is definitely like, I don't think they'd let me touch one of the $1 million ones. But they can get that expensive. I've played ones in the like $50,000 to $100,000 range, but just like when I'm at a violin shop, like, and they have one there and they let me touch it, you know, like, that is the range of a lot of violin, a lot of higher end violins. They can get that expensive. They can range from like $200 that you could buy like online, from there all the way to millions of dollars. And bows too, like a violin bow, like they can get up to like $200,000. Like they can be very expensive. I know it just looks like a stick, but it's a really, really important stick. And some of them are made from like this extinct Brazilian tree wood. And there's like, and it's like the best thing that you can get. And so it gets really rare. And so, you know, the prices can really vary on different instruments.
Is it rare because is it that expensive because it's rare, or is it that expensive because like, ooh, that really is a better violin?
It's both. I think there's definitely like with anything, like with fashion or business or whatever, like brand value is a thing. And there's some incredible violin makers from hundreds and hundreds of years ago that made these pieces of art that are just the most incredibly intricately crafted instruments that are not only just better, but then because like Stradivarius is probably the most commonly known violin maker. So to play on a Stradivarius violin, you know, it's very high quality. Also, it's really rare because obviously Stradivarius is not around anymore.
Coolest place you've ever played?
There's a couple answers to that. One of them, as I mentioned before, was Carnegie Hall. I toured there with an orchestra, and it was amazing. Definitely a life-changing experience because it's seen as such a important and incredible venue. But then I've gotten to play some really fun events at different like nightclubs, and I played at the House of Blues in Boston, and that was really fun. That was a really, really fun experience. But definitely probably Carnegie Hall is my favorite.
Best violin related joke?
Oh no. I mean, okay, it's like a thing in orchestras where like the instruments will make fun of each other. So like the poor violas, and a viola is like a violin, but the tone is a little deeper. The instrument's usually bigger and the strings are different. Instead of E-A-D-G, it's A-D-G-C. So in an orchestra, you have your first violins, sitting next to them are the second violins, then you have the violas, and then next to them are the cellos, right? And so all the instruments will kind of give each other a hard time, and people will make jokes about the viola, and then the violas will fire back with jokes about the violins. But like, it'll be really funny, funny, but also kind of like, they'll try to insult each other, like, oh, like, what's the best note you can hear, or the best sound that you can make from a violin, the sound of it hitting a trash can or something like that. I don't know.
Do you check your when you fly, do you check your violin in carry-on, or do you bring it with you? Or wait, do you check your violin or do you bring it with you?
Never, ever, ever check your violin, because the violin is so delicate that, like, even when the weather changes, my violin will freak out. And also, as you now know, violins can get pretty expensive. So I'm not trying to replace my violin every time I check it and it gets broken. So, because the air pressure is changing and stuff like that. So, and there's been a bunch of violinists who have tried to get on airplanes, and sometimes I've heard horror stories about the airline trying to force them to check the violin, and you can't, because it'll break it. I feel really bad for cello players, though. What they have to do is either one of my roommates is a cellist, and he will either like take the risk and check the cello, but put it in like this really intense like case with all this padding in it, and just like take the risk. Or cellists will have to buy a second plane ticket for their cello. I have some friends that have done that. My brother's a cellist. So if he were to travel with his cello, he would have to buy a second plane ticket and just sit next to it on the flight. Yeah.
That's got to be a weird feeling.
Yeah.
Like, that's got to be strange. Like, just sitting here with my cello. God.
They offer it a
drink. Imagine having, like, the cello is just in the middle seat.
That's like, what they do. That's what you have to do.
Can you move this thing, man?
Like, no, this cello, you gotta put it in its seatbelt. You gotta offer it a drink. It is a right. Member of the plane.
Yeah. It is. You paid for the ticket. You better get those snacks for it. That makes sense.
But like,
I would demand it.
A lot of people will rent instruments in whatever city they're in, or like for tours and stuff. Even if people are flying, sometimes they'll have like a driver drive all the instruments to the next location. Like it depends. Like people find ways around it. But I think like traveling with your instrument is the best way if you can afford it. Like obviously it's a huge expense, but then you're not playing an unfamiliar instrument where you go. But like my school orchestra, we toured Europe once and went to Austria and we're playing there, and we couldn't bring the cellos on the plane. So we just rented cellos when we were there, and the cellists just had to kind of figure it, and the bass players too. They just had to figure it out when they were there, and it was okay.
See, you just get a flute, right? What's the little tiny one? Like the piccolo? Whatever. Yeah. Just get a piccolo. Put that thing in your pocket. So you've said some words that I didn't definitely recognize. Best piece of violin lingo.
Best piece of violin lingo. There's so much. It's so cool. And that's been the thing, is I've been exposed to like German and Italian and sometimes Spanish, because there's all these different in the music, there's all these different markings and you got to learn what they mean. So let's see. A lot of people will ask me, can you play your violin without a bow? And that's actually one of my most viral videos, was me answering that question. And the answer is yes. You just pluck the string with your finger, and it's called pizzicato. Or for short, pits. I like that one a lot. I like ricochet. That's where you kind of bounce your bow on the strings, but every time the bow bounces, you play a note. So it sounds really cool. I like glissando. That's when you slide into a note, and I do that all the time. There's so many. I could just go on and on and on.
Oh, those are good ones. Now, is your new album out now?
Yeah. Coming out? The single is out. I'm in the process of writing the album, but the single, I just dropped it on, on October 20th. So it's been out for a couple months now. And people have been really supportive of it. It's on all streaming platforms. And it's also, I did a music video in a laser light studio, and that's up on YouTube. So I'm really excited about it.
That's pretty much all the questions that I have. Is there anything that you think that we missed or anything like that?
No, the last thing I want to say though is I appreciate when people are open-minded about what the violin is capable of, and that's my passion in life, is showing people that the violin can break a lot of boundaries and doesn't need to be intended for just one style or another. You know, there's so many capabilities, and the most important thing is to find what speaks to you and pursue that, and find what makes you happy, because there's space for everyone to, and if everyone's doing the same thing, then collectively we can all support each other, and that's the best thing we can do.
I want to thank Mia so much for joining us. If you want to connect with her,
We have linked to her on our social media accounts. We're profoundly pointless on Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram. And we have also included her information in the episode description. Okay, now let's go ahead and bring in John Shaw and get to the pointless part of the show.
Did you ever play an instrument growing up?
I did. I played the trombone, actually, until this...
of all the instruments that you could possibly play. You know what, though? You look like a guy who plays the trombone. I can't, if you, even if people listening to this have never seen either a trombone or you, they would immediately picture what, like, oh yeah, that's a guy who plays the trombone.
The ending of my trombone career is actually quite dramatic. I've never shared this story.
Did you say traumatic or dramatic? Because I kind of hope it's both, to be honest.
I tried to blend it because it is traumatic and dramatic at the same time.
Okay.
I was never good enough to play the saxophone, which I always wanted to play. But I wasn't that uncoordinated just to sit there and bang on the drum. So trombone was kind of in the middle.
Wait a minute. Are you insulting drummers? I feel like a drummer is probably one of the more coordinated ones.
I mean, I think once you get to a certain level, a seventh grade band where you just have to, you know, hit the gong once every eight notes isn't that terribly hard. I'm sorry.
No, I feel like anybody can pretty much do that. But like the triangle, you're just dinging the thing. Like, all right, come on. Yeah, you're like, you're clearly just somebody's friend who's like, oh, yeah, you can be in the band too, Steve.
All right. So I'll try to wrap this up in 2 minutes so I don't bleed out here. It was the seventh or eighth grade holiday band concert, and I'm playing the trombone.
Are you first chair, second chair, or third chair? I need to know how good you were at the trombone. Where were you at in the rankings?
I was towards the end. So we're playing a song. Song gets over. I look at my buddy. My buddy was next to me, and for some reason, I wanted to get a laugh out of him. So, you know, a holiday concert. I'm in, you know, dress pants, button down t-shirt. Whatever. I, for some reason, find it funny to hold the trombone with one hand and put my other hand like between my pants and my belt, right? Like, for some reason, I think it's funny to like play the trombone with my hand stuck in my pants.
How far down your pants was your hand?
Well, no, it was on the outside. Like, it was between the belt on the outside of the pants. And I was just like being an idiot. Like, hey, look at my hand stuck. And I can still play the trombone one handed.
I see. So you weren't like trying to show that like you didn't have your hands in your pants. It was.
Yeah, no. God, dude. No, I'm on stage for fuck's sake.
I don't know, dude. I don't know what you're doing, honestly.
Anyway, so section comes up with the trombones. I realize at this point that like, oh, man, I better start playing. Or like, I'm going to sound terrible.
Oh, no, and,
well, I don't know if you know where it's going, but you probably do. I try to play one hand. The slide comes off, goes into the clarinet section in front of me, hits Samantha Moore in the back of the head. The whole band stops playing. It was a whole thing. I stand up like with the bass of the trombone with my right hand. My hand is still wedged between my pants and my belt. And some people found it funny. Mr. Betts, the band teacher, did not at all.
He wouldn't. No.
He took me off stage, told me to go home, and I was kicked out of band and never asked to join ever again, which is fine because I was playing sports. Band was kind of just something I liked to do. But yeah, he told me I was never welcomed in the band ever again after that. So
wow. Honestly, I feel like that teacher's a jerk, right? Like, you can't ban a 7-year-old kid for life for trying to play a joke. Like, what if you completely discourage some kids? What if you were the next great trombone musician and he completely discouraged you simply because you got your hand stuck down your pants? The first guy.
Well, God. I mean, I was always considered kind of a jokester, and he knew that. And
there's a pattern of behavior then.
You know, it's on video. It is on video, which I don't know if my parents still have the video, but it is on video.
Well, you have to find that and we have to see it because it is, that sounds
man.
Were you on risers? Tell me you were on risers.
We were not on risers, no. Oh, but poor Samantha Moore. I don't even know what's happened to her. So I say this hopefully out of respect. But I just remember the slide hitting her like just below the like back of the head, you know, like in the neck area. And she took a dive. The flutes went flying. Everybody stopped. And probably the worst part about it was I stood up, obviously, in shock. And I just look over at my buddy, and he is dying. I mean, he is like on the floor, dying laughing. Actually, true story. After that, I went into theater and actually starred in a couple of plays. So it kind of opened one door to something else. So,
what? I don't even know if I have the energy to get into this. After 177 episodes, there is still always something that I'm like, what?
What about you? I don't think you – did you ever play an instrument?
No, I have no musical talent whatsoever. One of the kind of things where having so little talent of it, you never even considered the possibility. Like, why would I ever even consider playing an instrument when I knew damn well I couldn't potentially play any instrument? No matter how simple the instrument was, there was no chance of me playing it. So there was no point in wasting like anybody's time with that.
Yeah, I think that's smart. I do know how to play the guitar. I played it in college. Eric Clapton, actually, the song Layla.
Oh my God! Did you bring your guitar out at a party?
Yeah, all the time. I'm sure there's videos on YouTube of me and my ex band playing at talent shows around Michigan.
Did it ever help you with anything? Like, did you ever actually get anywhere by pulling out your guitar? Please.
Yes. In college, my final 2 years, I lived in a house that had a wraparound porch. And me and some of the other guys would just sit on the porch and just play. People would show up. And many a times it was, you know, females, and it was a good time.
First of all, let's cut down many a times, right? Let's cut that down to probably once. And then the second time, you might have happened, or it could have been a dream.
Well, it's always a dream, okay? It never actually happened.
Okay. All right, let's move on.
All right, am I going to give some shout outs? Is that where we're at?
It's really up to you if you're ever going to be able to do it. I'm just waiting on you.
I'm here ready to I was going to say more guitar things. All right. Let's see. We'll start off here at Devin Reeder. Appreciate you. Darrell Sinram, Parth Mandelik, Scott Fender, Emily Lynch, Adam Hajal, Anna Galperin. I almost wrote that to where I couldn't read my own writing.
That seems like one of the easier ones.
Yeah. Yash Limbar, Monica Giles, and Nick Falter. Appreciate all of you checking us out. All right. I have a couple of bangers for you for questions. I hope you're ready.
Okay.
Would you rather have to escape a bear in the forest or outrun the bulls in Spain?
Oh, well, a bear in the forest, like, I don't know if you've ever been in the forest and encounter a bear. Like, they don't want to mess with you any more than you want to mess with them, man. Right? Like, we're a fairly sizable animal compared to, like, the rest of nature. Like, other animals don't know that physically we ain't shit compared to them, but we look big. Right? Like, people are a big animal.
I should have known you were going to dive into this question.
Right. I don't think the bear is going to really wants to mess with you unless you absolutely give it a reason to. So I would much rather run into a bear in a forest than deal with the bulls in Pamplona running from those things.
Wow. And you know where they are. Well, that's – look at you showing off some culture. That's impressive.
Right. I mean, we've had a bullfighter on this podcast. So.
Right. But I'm surprised you remember. I'm surprised I even remember. And I'm just proud of you. And your hair looks great today. All right. Next question. Okay. Would you trust who would you trust more to pull you from a burning building? Your best friend, we'll say me, your dad, or a complete stranger?
Oh, a complete stranger.
Yes, I figured that would be your answer.
Right, because this is a guy that fucked up a trombone concert, right? Like, you're going to pull me from a burning building? You're going to end up getting me more stuck and killing yourself. My dad's 77 years old. He's not pulling anybody anywhere. Like, I'd much rather have a complete stranger help me out.
Yeah, I think, like, if you were my best friend in that situation, I'm not entirely sure you would take me seriously. Like if I called you, it was like, Nick, my apartment's on fire. I need you. I feel like you would say, no, it's not, man. Just walk out.
Well, I would say walk out and call 911. What are you calling me for?
That's true.
What am I going to do? Call some people who actually know how to deal with this. I'm not hauling your big ass down the steps. What percentage of the people that you know would you trust to save your life?
Oh, man.
Like, they could actually save your life through either the capability or the kind of, like, caring enough about you to do it. Like, what percentage of your family and friends would you say, oh, that person could probably actually save my life?
I'll say less than 5%.
Yeah, it's shockingly low.
Yeah.
I can think of two people in my life that I'd be like, that person can get me out of a burning building. I think you could get me out of the burning building, but then you would trap yourself in the burning building while doing it, and then I would have to go back and get you.
I'm definitely the bravado type. I would run in and, you know, I got you, Nick. Get out. Save yourself. Oh, wait, this is a bad idea.
Save me. I'm fucking trapped.
A couple things here. First is funny. The second one, not so much. But I was doing some Googling. Found, I know we're not big eggnog fans, you or I. At least I don't think we are. But Hidden Valley, the ranch company, now has ranch nog. And I wanted to throw up just looking at it. So that
sounds disgusting.
It does, but apparently it's quite good according to the reviews I was reading, and it was trending on Twitter all last week. Ranch nog.
I don't believe any reviews anymore, because every time that I bought a product that had great reviews, it turns out to be a piece of shit.
I guess I just don't really trust companies at all anymore, to be honest. I've had so much stuff messed up or things that I've gotten that are messed up that it's really hard just to trust anybody anymore. All right. So how would you feel if your CEO invites you to a Zoom meeting, especially with it being the holidays, and you think you're going to get some good news, or at least just, you know, see your coworkers over Zoom, just like a holiday party. Next thing you know, CEO comes on and he says, if you're on this call, you're getting fired.
God.
That happened just a couple of the end of last week. The Better.com mortgage company's CEO came on to a Zoom meeting, literally just said that sentence, and said, you know, after that sentence, then he said one other thing, and that was HR will be in touch with you about your severance and insurance packages.
Wait a minute. He actually used the words. He actually said, if you're on this call, you're getting fired.
Like, terminated. He said terminated. Yes. Yes. That is exactly what he said.
That's a complete moron of a person then. Right. Yeah. I understand the idea that, like, look, we live in the times that we live in. You've got to communicate to people. If you've got that many employees, the CEO can't come on there and individually tell people, like, right? You can't set up 9,000. How many people got fired?
900.
You can't set up 900 individual Zoom calls to do that, right? Especially before word spreads around and that person finds out from somebody else. So I get the idea of doing that. But the way that he started that and sounded, if that's exactly what he said, he's a fucking moron, right? Like,
well, he's getting a lot of hate. I mean, it's out for...
Rightly, you know, so.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's a way that you can do that, right?
Sure.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to lay people off. And this is the financial situation. Like, everybody's an adult. And everybody can handle that. As long as you don't come out there and, like, sucks to be you guys. You're in this call. You're getting fired.
Yeah, that's the only reason that it caught my eye was the headline. If you're on this call, you know, you're gone. It's just, man.
Yeah, that's just an idiot. That's a stupid way to do that. Try to act like a human being, because I guarantee that guy didn't take a pay cut.
Oh, probably not.
What an asshole. Okay, so he's the worst person in the world. all right, you ready for our top five?
I am. Let's do it.
Okay. So our top five is top five things that we wish we were better at. What's your number five?
Not being such an impulse buyer.
Control yourself more, huh?
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. And I am the definition of an impulse buyer. So I wish I had more control over just saying no, because, you know, a lot of times the things that I impulse buy, I get them and I'm just, you know, why did I spend $25 on this? You know, it's
what's the stupidest thing that you bought?
Oh man, there's so many. I mean, I collect trading cards. So, you know, why pay $300 for a piece of cardboard?
Yeah, that's a pretty stupid purchase, to be honest with you.
It is. Anyways.
My number five is self-promotion. I'm not talking about like kissing ass. I'm talking about there are some people out there that are fantastic at like self-promoting themselves and getting ahead. I've always been jealous of those people and wish that I was better at like self-promotion. But I'm just not any good at it.
I would say that's ass kissing, but yeah.
But there's the people who are really good at it, though. There is a line that people can cross where they go into ass kissing. And some people can go right up against that line. So like you don't quite solidify them as ass kissers, right? They don't cross the line, and they're really good at it.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I wish I was better at both those things, by the way. Ass kissing and self-promotion.
Yeah. Do you think that your life would be easier, though, if you were a better self-promoter or an ass kisser?
No, I don't think so. I don't I actually think that I do a decent job of self-promoting, and it hasn't got me anywhere. So either I'm not doing a good job, or it just doesn't matter that much.
Do you feel like working harder has ever gotten you anywhere?
Okay, this is just me. I feel like I need to preface that, but absolutely not. No. And I think I've worked pretty hard throughout the first 15, 20 years of my adult life. And no, I don't feel like, actually, I would say the less you work, it seems, the more you get rewarded, especially in corporate America.
I would actually second that comment and say that I used to be a very hard worker, and then I started getting farther ahead in my career when I started to tell people no.
I will just say I agree with you wholeheartedly. You have to look out for you at the end of the day. No one else cares.
Yeah. Oh, well, I think it makes you demonstrate your value to people that, like, I'm not going to do that. And then they have to think about how much better it would be for you to be doing that. This is a whole other discussion. What's your number four?
I was having a good time with that one. So my number four is betting. I wish I was a better bettor on everything, because I don't win any fucking money betting anything.
Like, I would quit. If I failed at something over and over and over and over again, I would stop doing it.
Because you're a smart man. Because I can put down a dollar on an 18 parlay that might pay out, you know, 14 grand, which, you know, we've had a person on here that has said parlays are a sucker's bet, and they are absolutely true.
Yeah, sure. My number four is drawing. I've always wanted to be able to draw things. And
that's my number three.
Yeah, I'd love to be able to draw.
Yeah, I have like being an artist slash drawing, but because like I can't paint, I can't draw. I can barely do a good job of like coloring in the lines.
Well, I'm not that bad.
I'm pretty bad.
I mean, I'm bad enough that like if somebody was to have like draw something, I couldn't draw it well enough that you would even be able to tell what it was. Like if I was doing a police sketch, they're like, draw us where it is on the map. Like, is that a lake? Oh, that's a tree. Like what?
Yeah. Sir, can you just draw a little map of your route home?
Yeah. What is that? That's the road. Why does that look like a person? That's the road, though. It's curvy. My number three is kind of like that, is building stuff. I wish I could build things.
Okay. So, man, we have a lot of parity in our list. My number two is just like being handy, you know, that can go along with building stuff. Just, you know, being able to do things around the house, I guess.
Yeah. I'm basically incompetent. But okay. My number two is organization. I wish I was more organized in life in general.
I've only known you for what, 10 years now? You seem pretty organized to me. You don't seem unorganized. Unless your wife does everything.
Well, yeah, she does a lot of it. But I could be more organized. Like what I would want to be organized versus what I am organized, I would much rather be more organized.
Percentage-wise, compared to the average person, what would you say, you know, your level of organization is?
I couldn't do it percentage-wise, but I could do it on like a scale of 1 through 10. If 5 is average, I'm honestly, straight up, probably an 8 or a 9. Like I'm pretty organized with things, but I want to be a 10. And my brain doesn't operate well unless it would be a 10. So I feel very disorganized, even though organization might be my best quality, but it's also the thing that I feel like I need to do more of. Ooh, Here's a question for you. If you were a billionaire, how much money would you spend not to be bald?
I would go no more than five, unless somebody or something could tell me that the hair was going to look like perfect, like it was my own hair. Then I would probably spend upwards of 20 mil on it.
Wow. Would you spend 100 million? If you were a billionaire, and not just 1 billion, let's say you had 2 billion plus, would you spend $100 million trying to grow hair? Whether that is, even if it's a business investment and you're like, you know what? I got this cure. Let's invest in it. And you could maybe make money off it, but how would you spend $100 million trying not to be bald?
No, I think 100 million. I don't think I don't think I would go over 20 mil.
I could go as high as 50 million.
Oh, God. Just talking about this, I wish I had that kind of money just to really think about these questions.
But think about it in terms of if you had $100,000, right? So that would be, I don't know, I can't do that math at all. That wouldn't even, okay. A billion is 1,000 million. So 10% of that would be 100 million. So 50 million would be 5% of your income. Would you spend 5% of your income not trying not to be bald?
Yeah. I mean, I would think so.
And who's got, like, Elon Musk? Elon Musk is worth like $100 billion. Would you even bat an eye if that dude spent $500 million trying not to be bald?
No, I mean, I really wouldn't care.
What's your number one?
I mean, it's pretty boring, but it's just maintaining, you know, trying to maintain a diet or working out. Like, I just wish I was better at good at those things. I'm just not, because I make excuses. It's either my kids, or I'm too tired, you know, or just life is too busy. I just wish I was better.
I just put life in general. I just wish I was better at life. my other, also, I think I have two number ones. I don't think. I'm looking at it right now. I have two number ones. The other one would be sports. Because I think that if being really good at sports is probably the best thing in all of life. Because, hear me out. If you're really good at sports, you probably are going to become wealthy. You're going to have a lot of opportunities. And it's one of the few things in life, I think, that is a true meritocracy, in which you don't succeed based on luck. Like, you're either good, you get there based on how good you are, not necessarily based on who you know or the circumstances that happen to you. Like, sports is kind of like, if you're good, you're going to get to the top. Not in other things where you can be really good, but shit just doesn't work out for you. I don't think that happens in sports.
I had that and being good at like financial things on my honorable mention.
That's a good one too. Yeah, I do wish I was better at financial stuff.
Yeah, because I could be in a completely different place financially if I just would have had the wherewithal and maybe used my brain in my 20s. But instead, you know, here we are.
No, that's what your 20s are for, screwing it up. And then you spend the rest of your life fixing those mistakes that you did in your 20s. What's in your honorable mention?
Being patient. We talked about sports, financial awareness. And then I just have, I kind of wish that I was better at not getting so emotional when I don't need to be emotional.
You are overly emotional about things. Ridiculous times.
I can be, yes.
My number, all that I have in my honorable mention is like cooking.
Okay. I mean, I
wish I was a better cook. Oh, here we go. Don't fucking.
I'm not. I wasn't. I was just going to say, I think I'm a decent cook. So that's not my list.
What thing do you think you don't need to be any better at?
I feel like I can be better at everything. I don't feel like there's one thing that I feel like I can improve in every aspect of my life.
Lowest on your priority list.
Probably taking care of my family. I think I think I do a great job at that so far.
Mine would probably be patience. I think I should actually be less patient than I am.
Yeah, you're a pretty relaxed guy. That's for sure.
Okay. We talked about ourselves a lot this episode.
Okay, that's going to go ahead and do it for this episode of Profoundly Pointless. I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, please leave a review. It really helps us out. We really appreciate it. And I'd love to hear, what are some of the things that you wish that you were better at? quite frankly, both John and I should have put this podcast as our number one thing.